Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of not just mind power, but a little bit of fashion power today. We are going to be talking with a woman who is not only a historian of fashion, this is a gal that has just done so much. Her name is Betty Crassell Schubert. She is a woman that is incredibly talented, and she has put together a book, never realizing how much people would enjoy it, especially people that were interested in the history of clothing for we gals. Well, Betty is just quite a person here of high repute, renown in Hollywood and in other areas of the fashion industry. And I want to welcome her to the show. Betty, it's delightful to have you today.
Well, I'm happy to be here with you, Donna. Thank you for inviting me.
You know, I think I'm just like every other woman in the world. We always want to look pretty. We want to look beautiful. We admire so many different aspects of fashion, and some of them we can't stand. And in this book, I mean, when I actually received your book, I went, holy Moses, this is a woman that really knows her stuff. And you have been involved in the fashion industry for most of your life. You've designed different types of outfits, costumes for stage, screen, television specials, Las Vegas musicals. For Disneyland, you've done costuming, and you've done uniforms. Now, here's another spectrum. We don't seem to give that too much credibility in our everyday thinking. Uniforms, how people look. Yeah, with a professional demeanor for cruise lines, racetracks, hotels, restaurants, casinos. And you also are very much in touch with people who are genealogists. And that was a twist you didn't expect. And it's because people bring to you photos and they'll say, I just don't know when this was taken, what the time frame is. You are so knowledgeable. You can look at the clothing style and say, well, this has to be around this time, because so many people have these albums. Betty, you're just an amazing woman, and this book is a lifetime of knowledge that you have put in. You love fashion yourself. When did you decide that, wow, you wanted to be in the designing of clothes?
Well, I was 13 years old. The year was 1938, so now you know that I'm 88 years old, and next month I will be 89. And I sold my first design when I was 13 to a manufacturer, and it became their bestseller that season. And from then, you couldn't stop me. And then I went to Beverly Hills High School and took sewing and art and design, and did all the costumes for the school productions for 4 years. And one of my friends, a boy, his father was a producer, came to see him perform, and he'd see my costumes, and he said, the next time I do a show, I'll let you do the costumes. And so that's how, when I first got out of high school, I had my first hit show, and then a second hit show, Hollywood show, while I was still 18. So I was just lucky I was in the right place at the right time.
Well, I think that it wasn't just luck. I think that you have this wonderful, wonderful talent. And there's a lot of people that maybe can put costumes together, but they don't have the design. You have the entire package. You knew you could see things in your head. You could see designs. You then could put things together. And that is a real talent. Now, go ahead.
That came about because when I started so early, I had to be able to control the execution of my costumes. And I opened a little costume shop in Beverly Hills and then in Hollywood. I hired the Motion Picture Costumers Union craftspeople, highly skilled, specialized craftspeople. And from them I learned pattern making and fitting and construction and millinery. And so I've always been able to, I needed to make my designs. Some designers, they just draw a picture and then they leave it to the interpretation of the workroom, which can be kind of iffy. You know, it depends on how it was interpreted. And because I knew how to construct things, when people would tell me, well, you can't do it like that, I could say, oh, yes, you can. This is the way you do it. And because I understood the construction, my sketches were easy to read and interpret. And then in the fitting room, I knew what fitting was about, so they couldn't, you know, make any mistakes. And so I didn't have any surprises on opening night. So and then being able to illustrate, able to articulate the differences in styles and then illustrate them. And then I found that I had a talent for writing, so then I could describe what I was illustrating. So my book was kind of a breakthrough because I have, like, on the left page will be the illustration and to the right of it will be the actual description. I could see the, and because I worked for so many decades in the industry, I could see the actual progression, the sequences of changes in fashion, and able to articulate them to the people. And that's why my book is a breakthrough, because many history of costume books are written by scholars who see the clothes in museums as specimens, and I see them as clothes really to be worn.
And that is what makes your book so fascinating. Your book, Out of Style, A Modern Perspective of How, Why, and When Vintage Fashions Evolve, is incredible. And you're dealing with women in this one. And this is about the 19th century through the 20th century, and it goes a little beyond. And on the cover of your book, I just have to chuckle, because on the right side of the cover, there's this demure Southern style looking girl with the long curls, just like you see in Gone with the Wind, her little parasol, and then the skirt that's on it, it shows her pantaloons underneath and how that was a part of the undergarment that the women wore. But the way the skirts went from one level to another and the periods there, and then you show on the left side of the cover this sweet young thing, blonde, that's in a jean skirt and a tank top and high heels, and just so different, so different. So let's talk a little bit about history, and we'll go backstepping. And all of us, all of we gals, at one time or another, have watched some of the old Judy Garland movies and those depicting the periods of the hoop skirts. And I think of the old movie about Little Women. And my goodness, I looked at those, and they had hoop skirts, and that was in the 1800s when it was being portrayed. And I thought, holy Joseph, how in the world did they keep those things clean? And the hoop, what a pain in the neck. I mean, if you sat down the wrong way, I know, because I had a gal in a wedding. She was wearing a hoop skirt. She was absolutely in love with that. I thought she was going to kill herself before she got up to the point where I was going to be able to marry her and her husband. It was just unbelievably difficult to maneuver and manage unless you were trained in how to do it. And if you sat down the wrong way, boop, the hoop would come up. Not
well,
too
Donna, much. Donna, you've touched on several interesting things. For one thing, the illustration on the cover, which shows it shows exactly how fashions evolve. In the 1830s, skirts weren't very full, and then they kept adding petticoat after petticoat, and finally the skirts got bigger and bigger, and then they developed a hoop to hold it out, and then that eliminated a lot of petticoats and a lot of laundry, and laundry in those days was very difficult. In the earlier days, they had to bring the water from creeks, and they had to heat it in big pans, and it would take several pans to fill enough to wash laundry. They had to have water to rinse it. They had to heat it, in a fireplace. It was very, very cumbersome and took a long time. So, a few hundred years ago, they only washed clothes every few months. It was such a big project. So when the skirts got fuller and they put the hoop skirts in, made of whalebone, until they depleted the whalebone industry, incidentally, when they did that, they could eliminate a lot of laundry, and they didn't have air conditioning in those days, and so that helped a lot. But then, if the hoops tilted up, you could see everything, and in those days, women's legs were never displayed. You couldn't even use the term leg. Women had limbs, not legs, and so little girls had wore pantaloons under their little skirts. So women adopted the pantaloons that little girls wore. So if their hoops tilted up, they wouldn't be embarrassed, by showing everything. So you've touched on a lot of subjects with that one question.
Well, it's just, I think it is really fun. I know that there was a documentary done on families in the 1800s, and Westerners, actually it was Londoners, went through this. This was called the 1900 House. And I will never forget how the wife of this family, because it was a family of husband, wife, and three children, and when she had to live the way these women used to live, and like you said, you didn't do laundry very often. It was an exhausting protocol. That is often why girls were not allowed to go to school. They were to stay home, help their mothers. They became workhorses, basically, because one person couldn't handle doing the laundry for the whole family.
Let me bring out another point. Is because it was so tedious, rich people could hire laundresses, and
yes,
the laundresses took the laundry home and did it in their home. And in order to keep the clothes separate of the different families that they were washing for, they embroidered a name on the clothes to identify the clothes, and that's how clothes that had your name on it or your initials became classy and very special. What happened was, I would come across in researching for this book, and I've got 150 books in my bibliography, and that doesn't count all the hundreds of books I've read in my lifetime, but just specially for this book, I would come across a tidbit of information here and there, but it was unrelated to anything, and only by knowing what that meant, I put them in relevant sections so that it made sense. Like I went into the story about laundry, and I thought it was very interesting how embroidered initialed clothes became a classy thing. And I put it where it was, relevant. There were other instances, like when I read about when sewing machines were invented, and the first lock-stitch sewing machine was invented about 1853 by an American, was the first to patent it. And, what did that mean, a lock stitch? If you didn't know what that meant, it was a useless piece of information. But what it did is, before that, hand-turned sewing machines, if you broke a thread, the whole seam would run like a stocking. And the lock stitch meant that if it broke, just two or three stitches would break. So then they could make long seams, and that developed the sewing machine. So that by Civil War, they had to make a million, uniforms overnight.
Mm-hmm.
And women were able to have sewing machines in their homes. It became the first automated appliance in homes. So the point being that all of these pieces of information that I came across, I was able to put in meaningful places for the first time. By the way, Donna, did I tell you that my book is chosen by a major reviewer as one of the best of 2013. I'm not able to reveal their name until a few days from now when they officially report it, but I was very proud that it was chosen.
Well, you should be. Now, let's talk about the bustle and the hustle and the rump, hump, bump. I love those terms. I just think they just personify this. Whenever you watch a Sherlock Holmes program and you see these women with these little itsy-bitsy waists, my goodness, it was because of those horrific corsets. And style and fashion, for the longest time, the skirts were very, very long, very, very long. And I personally love long skirts myself. However, they're not very practical. And if you look at the pioneer women in the Wild, Wild West period, they really had a tough time because they had to work in skirts, but a lot of them abandoned that to wear slacks. But it wasn't the proper thing to do for a lady, and it made it very difficult for her. But the bustle, it went out of fashion, and then it came in fashion. And I love the images you have in here. Some of these dresses with these bustles, and if you watch some of the Hollywood movies that go back to the old time frame, I mean, these gowns that these gals wore in the movies, they were gorgeous. I love the style. I love the fabrics, the lace, all of the different things that they used. But I'm here to tell you, that stuff would not necessarily be comfortable to wear. Furniture was even affected in design because women couldn't sit. They had to sit on the edge of their chairs to be able to deal with that bustle.
You've touched on a lot of subjects. At one point, they developed attachments for sewing machines that would make fancy stitches and attach a lot of, decorative braids and fringes. And women were described as that era as the upholstered look. They were like the parlor. The word parlor is an out of style word, but they were as hard. Upholstered as the corner, settee. Mm-hmm. The point I want to make is fashions don't just happen; they evolve very logically. Now the bustle skirts got as wide as they could get, and they pulled the fullness to the back. And one day somebody pulled up the back, and voila, the bustle. Story's been told that Charles Worth, a very influential English designer who went to Paris and opened the world's first couture salon, and so then we had influences combined England and France influences. The story goes that one day he saw his laundress pull her top skirt up to keep it clean, and that's how he designed the first bustle. That may or may not be true, but it sounds logical. But anyway, they started piling the draperies in the back, and it got bigger and bigger. And, of course, as you always happens, when fashions reach their maximum of exaggeration, then the exact opposite is done. So then bustles were dropped. But they were brought back in about the 1880s, from the 70s, they disappeared for about 10 years. In the 80s, they came back, but it'd have a different look. And if you've ever seen that old painting, Sunday in the Park, where everybody looks like a sitting hen, and what happened was the skirts underneath became wider and wider, and then the bustle was hanging down the back like a waterfall, and it was a completely different look. So you can identify the difference. In fact, I have, it's the first time I've seen it done in my book, where I showed the 9 phases of the rise and fall of the bustle, followed by its final demise, and it shows. For the first time, like if somebody's doing the costumes for a film or something, you need to know the difference in the two eras of the bustle. And then speaking about skirt lengths, long and short, there are 2 pages in my side by side, 2-page spread in my book that also never seen before. It shows from 1900 to the year to the 20th century. The evolution of skirt lengths, and I title it "The Bottom Line About Hemlines and the March to Modernity in 100 Years." And it starts out with the 1900 with the S-curve silhouette, like the powder pigeon look, and it got shorter and shorter as women evolved until we get to the 1960s where we had the micro minis, And so many women couldn't wear them. If you didn't have the legs for them, you didn't want to be that exposed. So that's when women started wearing pants. That shows the self-realization of women, so that now you can wear anything you want. There are no fashion dictators, and at any event you can see long and short and micro mini and knee length and capri pants and anything that you feel like wearing. It's okay.
Mm-hmm. Now, I wanted to mention some of the facts that you have in your book, and that is that historically, a full-figured woman, I'll just use that term, a woman that had a bust, full figure, all of this was acceptable. This was not, and she wasn't obese. When I'm talking about full figure, the size would have been about maybe a 12, somewhere in there. But my goodness, sizes have changed dramatically. And you said in your book, you say the woman's body was a very soft body, and it didn't have very much muscle tone. And today's world, and this started in the 60s, was it Twiggy in the 60s that looked like a stick, that all of a sudden everybody else was supposed to look like a stick?
Yeah, I think it was the 50s.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it was. The difference between a good figure, a fantastic figure, and a boyish figure, is the bust to waist, waist to hip measurement. And for instance, the show that I did, Ken Murray's Blackouts in Hollywood, that broke all records, ran for 6.5 years, and then went to Broadway. Marie Wilson was the star of the show, and Marie was the first of the dumb blondes, and people might remember she had a television series, My Friend Irma. Well, Marie was, her measurements were 38, 24, and if I tightened her waist, 22, so 38, 22, and 38. And she was in the show, and she wore, put her in, very low-cut things with bustles. And she'd come out on the stage jiggling as she went, and of course Ken Murray had been a star of vaudeville, and so he would tease her, he'd say, "Well, where are you from?" And she'd say, "I'm from Anaheim. I was born in a grapefruit grove." And he'd say, "Well," shaking his cigar, "well, that explains a couple of things." And so they made a lot of jokes about her, but she was always very ladylike, very, very naive, which is why she got away with it. Anyway, so that was a fantastic figure. And then here's a bit of showbiz history. When the show it played at Hollywood and Vine at the El Capitan Theater, when the show went to New York, Ken Murray had to recast the role because Marie Wilson had to stay in Hollywood because of her television show. And so they auditioned starlets all over Hollywood, one of whom was the yet unknown Marilyn Monroe. Marilyn Monroe did not get the part because she couldn't film Marie Wilson's costumes. Marilyn Monroe was like, I think, 36, 24, and 37 or something like that, and she couldn't, fill the bill, so she didn't get the job, which was kind of interesting. I think Ken Murray was always sorry he didn't hire her after it turned out she was such a big star. But anyway, Twiggy. Now, Twiggy's measurements were almost straight up and down. I don't know what mm-hmm. I think I put her measurements in the book. I don't remember. But her measurements were, she's probably, I'm guessing, like 31, 24, and 32 or something like that, So, but she had a very expressive face. And she was the first, with triple eyelashes, and she was special. And she was influential in her time.
No kidding, because everybody tried to go out and get that look, and my goodness, that is next to impossible. I mean, I heard about women that even went and tried to get surgery so that they would have no hips, so that they wouldn't have much of a bust. I mean, that really sounds gross, but that
fashion. We went through that in the 1920s. Women got they got the vote in 1920, and that's when they started try to emulate boys, and they didn't wear corsets anymore. It was the first time, and flattened the breast and disguised the female body. And the best compliment you could give to a girl in those years was, "My dear, you have absolutely nothing." But that lasted. Even in Paris, the bare-breasted showgirls at the Lido de Paris, they were chosen for flat-breasted in those years to emulate boys. But then we got over that, and by the 30s, we wanted to discover a female body again. So that was good.
Now, one of the points that you bring out in your book that I thought was very interesting is that the smallest corsets in museum collections measure from 20 to 26 inches in the waist. That's considered normal even today.
That was very interesting. In Gone with the Wind, you remember the scene where Scarlett's maid was trying to tighten her waist, tighter, I want 18-inch waist. Nobody had an 18-inch waist. They had 18-inch corsets that closed at 18 inches, but they would be tied and laced, allowing 2 to 4 or 6 inches expansion, depending on if she was swollen, as happens to women, periodically. If she was dressing for a ball, if she wanted to be comfortable for the day. So nobody had an 18-inch waist. They were garment measurements. During Gone with the Wind, the designer Walter Plunkett, who won the Academy Award for that, you know, marvelous job, had everybody wearing these tight corsets. And one of the lead actresses complained to David Selznick, the producer, you know, why did she have to wear this thing when nobody could see it? And he said, "No, but you will know that you're wearing it, because women who wore corsets sat and carried themselves differently." And he says, "No, but you will know that you were wearing it." And so he insisted that she wear it. But going back to 18-inch waist, there was a costume collector, historian, Elizabeth, I forgot her name offhand, and she collected authentic costumes in Europe. And then she wanted to try on those authentic clothes on modern women to see how they looked. And she found that modern women could wear those clothes. Those clothes were ultimately given to the Victoria and Albert Museum and other museums, so they're very valuable. But what she learned is that women's bodies had not changed. It was just the corsets and the measurements.
Fascinating stuff. You go into the history on the bra. There's so many different things that you cover, and I know we're just about out of time. For those of you listening, you gals, even you guys, there's a lot of men that enjoy being in the fashion industry or knowing about women's fashion. Wow, it gives such an inside track onto how it's evolved, and she gives information about the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s. I mean, there's just so much detail in here. We just
and over
have
700 illustrations, but I want to mention mm-hmm. that it's available on Amazon at a reasonable price.
Absolutely. This is fun if you have a girl in the family that just doesn't think mom or auntie or anybody knows anything about fashion. Whoa, what a cool gift. But more than that, what a point of discussion. I mean, there's so much history that she has in here, and I love her illustrations. Oh, it is really awesome. And Betty Kreisel Schubert, now let me give you the correct spelling of her last name. It's S-H-U-B-E-R-T. You can go to her website.
Like the Schubert Theaters.
Yes. So you can go to her website, outofstylethebook.com, outofstylethebook.com. It is a phenomenal book with illustrations. I guarantee you, you're going to learn things about fashion you didn't even have a clue about, and you will be able to talk about some of this stuff. And it's really an eye-opener, especially for the younger generation. But even for those of us that are older, whoa, who knew that because of certain circumstances, certain things were invented, and that we women had to go through all kinds of uncomfortable situations because somebody thought it was fashionable. Well, Betty, you've done an absolutely wonderful job. I'm delighted you've been with me. This is Donna Sebo. Check out Out of Style, the book.com. Special price, on Amazon.com. We're taking a break. Brady, thank you again. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedros accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hello and welcome back. Donna Sebo here. Telephone lines are now open, 888-627-6008. If you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Who's coming up this coming week? Well, we've got a dynamic lineup. The Lost Colonies of Ancient America, Frank Rowland. We're going to be discussing archaeology and newly discovered history about peoples that have been, well, ancestors to many of us, and more. So we'll be talking with him. And then, Why Dogs Hump and Bees Get Depressed, Mark Beckoff is going to be my guest. This is a man that has worked in the animal world for so many years, done a lot of research, writes a regular column, and he's going to give us some interesting details about animals. Alpha Wolf, Nick Clements, is going to be my guest. This is about young men and lessons that they have to learn. It's coming from a Native American perspective. Very powerful read. Also, we're going to be talking about Meeting with Robin. Gloria Parker, a mom who had a son that had some interesting sexual patterns and how she was able as a mother to adapt to the choices that he made about them in his life. Then we've got ingredients of outliers. Have you ever heard of the term outliers? Well, I hadn't. Well, John Schutfeld is going to be telling us more information about that and why that is so significant, that one word. You might want to look it up in the dictionary. And then we're going to be talking with Tim Hawk about 50 Rules for Son. This is a dad that says this is what young men need to know, and a solution-focused marriage. Elliot Connie is going to be my guest. So we have a phenomenal lineup of people that are coming up, and I invite you to join us. Also, share with your friends. Let them know, and you can always check out show information to find out more about the people that are coming up. So, again, telephone lines here are open, 888-627-6008. I promised you that I'd continue with the winter horoscope. This is just fun. This is just little frivolous things. We're going to be covering those of you born under the sign of Libra, Scorpio, and Sagittarius. Well, what about you, Librans? The sign of the scale. That's right. Well, if you're out looking for work, you're going to find it. You are going to find yourself this winter season being able to get more accomplished than what you ever thought. And you are going to be able to keep things in balance financially, personally, professionally. Yes. Now, you need to know, especially in the work arena, you have a chance to really move forward. You have a chance this winter to really make some determinations about what is going to be right for you. And you know what? Don't give up your dreams. If you're finding that you yearn to have something very, very special in your life, put it up there. Put it up on a vision board somewhere where you can look at it. But don't worry about how it's going to come to you. It may be in a surprising way. Scorpios, boy, you're dynamic people. You really like to be out in front. You love to have interactive, dynamic associations with people. And you may find that you're going to have to be very thoughtful about some of the people that are around you, because there may be a couple that want to dominate your space, and you're going to have to be assertive. But you need to know how to be assertive in the right way so that you don't alienate them. You need to be of a mindset where you're comfortable in your own skin. When it comes to being successful with money, being conservative is going to be your key. And sometimes that's very tough for you to do because you're very spontaneous. If you're going to do something, it's go for broke. That's the deal. Well, that's fine. But be wise here. Just balance things out a little bit better. Be conservative. Be consistent with your savings. And I'll tell you what, by the middle of February, you're going to find yourself feeling very good about a level of accomplishment that you will attain because you've kept your focus. Don't get out of focus. That's the biggest disadvantage you could have during these winter months. If you've got an objective, face that objective, look at it, be dedicated to it. Don't overburden yourself with too many resolutions. Have just one or two. That's what you want to do. But be focused. You're going to get it done. And for those of you under the sign of Sagittarius, well, you're Gabby Gertz. You really, really like to be around people, and you like connecting people. This is very, very important. And those social relationships, not just on the internet, but in real life, are going to be wonderful assets for you. And the home front is going to be very important to you. Finances, well, you're going to have to watch it, because there's some people that may want to borrow quite a bit of money from you, and it would deplete what you have. So remember, the little word no goes a long way to liberating you from that kind of a drain on your financial bank account. Remember, you take care of yourself first, and as you are in a position to do so, you can always be generous with other people if that's what you want. But take care of the home front. That is going to be very, very important. And be careful who you share your trust with. They've got to earn your trust. I'm not saying don't trust people. I am saying when it comes to those deeper issues that maybe you want to share with somebody, for heaven's sake, be discerning. That's a very powerful word. Be discerning. And that will serve you very, very well. But you know what? You're going to have a good winter here. You are so good with people. That is a strength that you need to be able to utilize, refine, and polish in any way that you can. You'll be way ahead if you do that. Well, those are three signs for winter, and we will be covering on the next couple of shows Cancer, Leo, Virgo, Capricorn, Aquarius, and Pisces, yes, for the winter months, so that you'll be all prepared. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. And by golly, if you're a first-time listener, know all you have to do is give me your first name or initial, and then let me tell you what I perceive. After that, you're welcome to ask me a question about anything you like. So 888-627-6008. Well, here we are in the holiday season. Oh, my goodness. Buzz, 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 buzz. Are you like me and you go, excuse me, how did this day go by so fast? How did this week go by so fast? And you keep hearing more about the ho-ho-ho stuff, and you go, wait a minute, how many days have we got? You got to be kidding. That's all I've got left before the big ho-ho-ho night. Well, that's the way it is. It's just amazing. We are all so occupied with so many things going on between phone calls and work and family and cooking and baking and preparation and having guests over, going to parties. It is an amazingly busy period. Give yourself a break every once in a while. Take a time out. We do it with our kids. You know that little sign where we make the little T say, time out? Well, why don't you do it for yourself? And it could be, with some people, I know some moms have to lock themselves in the bathroom and they have to put a big sign on the door, leave me alone. And they go in and they just zone out for maybe an hour or so. Or if you're the type of person, go to a local coffee shop. Do whatever it is that you want to do. Sometimes just going to the mall all by yourself can be invigorating because you don't have to talk to anybody. You don't have to do anything. You can just enjoy whatever's around. But I really encourage you to enjoy the holidays. If in your part of the world There's all kinds of festivities going on. Choose one or two that you really like to participate in. Here in the Pacific Northwest, we have what's called Zoo Lights. And our Zoo Point Defiance, and they've been doing this for years, you can go there for the longest amount of time. They've extended it. It's been so popular. Literally hundreds of thousands of people go every year. It is just such a joy. You bundle up. They have serve hot cocoa, all kinds of things, and you walk around the zoo, and they have all of these marvelous decorations. And it's, I don't know, it's just very calming. You don't rush. You take your time. It just gets you in the mood. It just makes you feel good. And it's some things like that that make the holidays very special, especially when you can share them with friends. And you just make it a casual outing. Enjoy the time. Take time to really enjoy the beauty of the season, the colors, the decorations, the expression of design and imagination that so many people come up with. It's magical. Really is. Now, also, one of the things I wanted to share with you is if you're interested in saving some money, some people have found, and these were suggestions, I'm not big into tweeting, but some people have found that if you're wanting to make a purchase, tweet at your favorite local shop, especially if you and some friends you have want to get the similar item. They small businesses love social media, and they will negotiate a group discount. Who knew? I didn't. Well, if that's your thing, you may find that if you and some friends want to buy some crystal or something else, you can get a good discount by ordering more than one. Also, go through expired Groupon offers and ask businesses if they can still offer you the same deal, even if there's an expiration date. You never know. You might be able to get that special buy. And also, if you have the patience and procrastination in this situation may work to your advantage, prices before Thanksgiving are usually artificially inflated to make Black Friday, you know, really successful. So if you shop for soft goods like scarves, sweaters, 4 to 6 business days before the Big C, store managers are already wanting to sell things at a much lower price because they've got to bring in new seasonal merchandise. I have a great deal of empathy for people in retail. I don't know how they do it because they have to put their orders in for things a year in advance, sometimes more, because it takes time to manufacture items. Well, they may be open to having special sales. And this is a way that I've shopped many times and gotten some excellent, excellent buys. So be aware, you don't have to spend a fortune. You can still have quality items, but have fun. I think it's really a wonderful, wonderful time of the year, and you shouldn't make it so oppressive that you're just saying, I wish it were over, I wish it were over. No, I want you to enjoy it. It's fun. I love this time of the year. Donna Sebo, we're taking a break. When we come back, I've got a hero doggy. Oh, and it's just adorable. I think it's a little shih tzu. Cute as a button. All right, when I come back, I'll share that story with you, or if you'd rather have me talk to you, 888-627-6008. Let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight for now and 2014. We'll be right back.
Have you ever had a paranormal experience, such as seeing a ghost, having precognitive dreams, out-of-body experiences, or other happenings? If so, Donna would like to hear from you. She's putting together a book of 100 stories from people who would like to tell their story. If you'd like to submit yours, send an email to donna@delphiinternational.com. Again, send your story to donna@delphiinternational.com. Be sure to include your contact information as well. Thank you.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. For those of you that are regular listeners to the show, you know I have a soft spot in my heart for doggies. And I'm just always so appreciative of stories that people send me make me aware of, and I get so many emails from many of you, and I really want to thank you for doing that, because though I may not be able to, you know, talk about a lot of this on the air at the time because I have so much material in front of me, but this one really I thought was just absolutely precious. And the little dog, and it is a Shih Tzu. Sometimes, depending on how they're cut, it's, you're not quite sure what the breed is. And Shih Tzus are absolutely adorable, absolutely adorable. Well, there was an animal control officer by the name of Michelle Smith, and she got a call. And she said, oh, it's just going to be one of the regular rescues, and this is her life. She's out there rescuing animals all the time. And there was someone that said, I'm hearing a dog barking, and it was behind one of the big box stores. And the person just said, I just don't know where this animal is. They couldn't find the animal. They got very concerned, but they said, sounds like the animal needs help. So here's Michelle. She goes out, and she could hear the dog, but the dog was crying. Not barking now. The dog was crying. Now, she's got 16 years of experience. I'll tell you, I don't care how many years of experience you have in working with animals that have been abused or abandoned. You never get over some of the things that you see, ever. And she said she finally found this crying dog. And it was a little Shih Tzu, and it was laying on a pile of leaves. And what she saw next just absolutely was astonishing. This little Shih Tzu was cuddling a baby kitten. That's right. The kitten was nursing. That was even more amazing. Michelle had never, ever seen this. Now, the dog had a collar, but no ID tags. And the kitten was so tiny, it couldn't have weighed more than a pound. And it was just a couple of weeks old. The likelihood of its surviving would have been extremely remote. And somehow or another, this kitten got separated, met up with this Shih Tzu, and what was amazing is that this box store was near a ravine. And Michelle said when she looked at everything that was around the box store, the dog could have just left the kitten, but she didn't do that. Now, Michelle, after so many years of working with animals, she relates to them. She reads their eyes, their body language, and everything else, and that's very important. And the dog, it was as if the dog was just begging her, please take us, please take us. We need to be someplace safe. So Michelle picked them both up and kept them together and put them in an enclosure. And she and her associates at the animal shelter said, we can't separate these two. This is just an amazing thing that has happened. They had no idea how long the dog had been lost or abandoned, nor where the kitten's mom was. But Mother Nature is a very interesting factor in life. Goldie, with this baby kitten, went through effectively a false pregnancy. Believe me, I know this happened because I had a Scottish Terrier, Trendle, that was having false pregnancies every other month. You want to go crazy? Oh boy, that's a good way to do it. Goldie was able to produce milk for this kitten, and she was taking care of it as if it were her own baby. And if this dog hadn't adopted the kitten would have died. It would have died from starvation. Amazing stuff. Well, the pair became eligible for adoption. They put the word out. Do you know they got inquiries as far away as England? People wanting to adopt the two of them together. They determined, though, they weren't just going to let anybody adopt this pair because this was a very special association, and Goldie was the name that was given to the little Shih Tzu, and the kitten's name is Kate, and they're just beautiful, beautiful buddies. Now, there was a woman. Her name is Melanie. She lives in Fountain Inn, South Carolina. And she had just lost a pair of animal friends, and it was a dog and a cat, interestingly enough, that had been with her for 16 years. And they were inseparable, but they went very close in time together, and it really left a huge void in her heart. And she just happened to see a news report about Goldie and Kate. And the reason they were given those names is that the dog was named after Goldie Hawn, and the kitten was named after Kate Hudson. Yes, so there you have that. And she, Melanie, turned to her husband, and she said, this pair, they belong to us. So they filled out an application, wrote a letter, and that letter won the staff's heart. And by golly, they said, we know that these two loving animals belong with you. And they've been together now for a while. A story about a dog taking care of a kitty. They're both ending up in a home with two people that had lost animals that they had loved, a dog and a cat. And that empty space was filled with these two tiny little people, tiny little fur people, that had hearts as big as they were, if not bigger, joining with a family that had hearts so big that they really belonged together. I wanted to share that with you because I think that those stories show how frequently the right people, the right place, the right time, it somehow works out. It really does. I know there's many experiences where we think, nah, it's not going to happen. But somehow or another, it does. Have you ever thought about bad experiences in your life? And you go, why in the world did this happen to me? I wasn't standing on a street corner saying, hey, Lars, suck it to me. No, we weren't doing that. But we grow through life. We grow through our experiences. We grow through barriers many times that we have around ourselves. And I've got some upcoming interviews that with people that were called heroes because of how they responded to certain situations. And they had become that quote-unquote hero in spirit because of adversities that they had gone through earlier in their lives. They knew how to stand tall and stand strong in who they are as people, and consequently were able to stand tall and strong in situations where they needed to. And I think we need to remember that. That is a gift. So wherever you are, remember always you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Wherever you are in this wonderful world of ours, count your blessings, look forward, not just with hope, but with expectation of the finest and the best. And in turn, right now, in this moment, be present and give the best you've got, because you deserve it. This is Donna Sebo. We'll be talking with you soon. Take care. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.